from Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning.
Hi, I'm Carrie.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Carson.
Welcome to our podcast.
You will be listening to some of our best moments of helping people to live their best lives, and all while, get this, working with horses.
We will be your hosts and have tons of guests along the way. Subscribe today and happy listening.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another week of the Horses Welfare. You know, this is such a, it's near and dear to my heart because, you know, when we are thinking of owning a horse, when we own a horse, and again, getting to that mental piece for our horses, that's seriously the welfare component, which, you know, it parallels to humans as well, because if we're not looking after ourselves inside and what that looks like and what that feels like, you know, we can really do a lot of damage, not only to ourselves, but to our wonderful and incredible horses. So it's so exciting when we can keep adding and learning that knowledge that is out there, and we're not keeping it a secret. I think this is my favorite piece, because when we don't have secrets in our horse industry and we're all aiming for that same ideal look on that welfare of the horse, what a great way to be one team in this world,
so
instead
true.
Of everyone keeping secrets to everything.
And far better to be collaborating this way and spreading knowledge about how we can take the best care possible of our horses in a collaborative way. So we're all working together to do so, and really to help improve the lives of all of our horses out there as well. So first of all, I'll do a quick little intro of us. My name is Carolyn Charles. I'm the Director of Sales and Marketing for the Equine Connection.
And my name is Carrie Fulmack with the Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning. And I am the founder and master instructor for our certified course that we globally help other human beings around the world to do what we're doing. And that's helping human beings through the power of our beautiful horses to move forward in life.
Yes, and you'll notice we're both rocking the pink shirts today for the Anti-Bullying Pink Shirts Day as well. So always keep that
in mind. That's global too.
Bullying bad.
Bullying bad, and bullying bad even with horses.
Yes, so true. We have a phenomenal guest here for you today. His name is Jason Skoog, and we get to have the pleasure of knowing him personally because he is just a phenomenal farrier. He's a phenomenal person, and he's going to even join us here to tell you a little bit more about how he got into this whole industry in the first place and how we can best take care of our horses from really the ground up, which is the feet.
You bet.
Yes. So
welcome. Yeah. We call him Jay, but it is Jason.
Yes. Yes.
So I might go back and forth with those two names.
Just
Are
so
you okay
knows.
With that, Jay?
Yeah, thankfully, I answer to both.
Very good.
There's worse things you could be called, I'm sure.
This is so exciting because, you know, it's so important. And I know all of us who have horses, we really thrive to get that right ingredient with the farrier coming in to maintain those horses' hooves, because, well, it's a huge foundation and element piece to, again, that welfare component of those horses.
And not only the technical aspect of things, but also the emotional aspect. So welcome, welcome, Jay. We're so happy to have you. But tell us a little bit about how you ended up in this field. How did you get into feet?
And why?
Well, good morning, everybody, and first off, thank you very much for having me. I made the mistake of watching the previous welfare series videos before, and actually, I watched most of them last night, and I'm a little bit in awe of who else you've had on this series, and I maybe feel a little bit out of place.
No,
believe you belong here.
Human being is important and has gifts.
But I'm very glad that you asked me, and I am very passionate about what I do. The reason I got into hoof care, actually I was reluctant to get into it because farrier work is hard on your body. It's hard work. And the reason I wanted to do it was because I was concerned about the whole horse. So have you guys ever heard anybody say, I'm not a trainer, and they walk up to the horse and the horse nudges them or pushes them, and they pick a handful of grass, give it to them, pet them, and walk away?
Yeah.
Sure have.
And then I look at my horse and I say, you and I are going to have a discussion about that a little bit later.
Exactly.
with every interaction we have, we're training our horse. Even if we're not horse trainers, we either leave our horse better or worse for our interaction with them. And so what I really wanted to do was to have the opportunity to have positive interactions with my horse on all fronts of interaction. And farrier, you know, there was some good farriers that worked on my horses, and there was some farriers that were good at their job, but I didn't feel like they left my horse for better afterwards.
Yeah, that's so important.
And so I wanted to make sure that I was getting all aspects when I worked with the horses.
I love that.
So
that's really good way to think about it too, is that it has to be the well-rounded piece of it. So it was really about the getting that well-rounded piece with the horses. So then you didn't feel like that was always happening. So you thought, hey, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah, I've always been a do-it-yourselfer kind of guy. So I like to take on projects. I mechanicked for a lot of years. And there was aspects there that allowed me to get into it. I could already use the tools quite well. And I had been trimming my own horses for about 7 years. And I wanted to learn how to shoe my horses as well. And so that's what led me into the farrier career.
Amazing.
Straight to the next piece of this is, how really does maintaining our horses' feet factor into the overall welfare of horses for you?
Well, as Carrie said, the feet are the physical foundation of the horse. There is the old saying, no foot, no horse, which stands true. I mean, there's a whole lot of other aspects that play into foundations. We have emotional foundations. And we have our physical foundations, and everything kind of meshes together, and we can't have one without the other. You know, physical problems make it hard emotionally, and emotional problems make it difficult physically, and we see those things manifest, and they really mesh quite seamlessly. So when we're looking after the horse's feet, we really have an opportunity to give a good balanced foundation, or to create problems, you know, both physically higher up in the horse, as well as emotional problems. Because if a horse is sore and they have a job to do, they're not going to want to do their job. And we can build resentment over time when we continue to make our horses work when they're sore.
That's definitely not a great welfare.
Yeah,
on the horse.
Soreness is bad. And you even think about like people, like, I don't know about you guys, but you ever get that blister on your foot when you're on like holidays and you're trying to walk somewhere?
Yes.
And all
no band-aid?
Like, yeah, can't do it. It hurts. It's horrible. So just imagine being these beautiful animals that really is, as a prey animal and as a flight animal, that's their safety piece, is to have their feet. So that would completely take away from the welfare of them if they're not comfortable on them too, right? So I think that part is very, very important with the feet. And I go with the old saying, no foot, no horse. I agree.
Well, it is true.
Yes. So we've heard lots of times with anxious horses, or horses that can be a little bit more challenging to get their feet done as well. How do you deal with that? Because we've seen you, we've actually seen you do feet.
And actually, and you know, it's interesting because you think you buy this horse or you get this horse that maybe been in dressage or parades or whatever, rodeo, whatever it is that you're doing, and they're all shod, they should be totally fine with the farrier. Oh, no, they're not, because sometimes those horses have been forced to do a specific thing. This is where a gut component is really important, because if something is not jiving with the horse and the farrier, why? What's happening with that piece? Because we owe it to our horses to look after them for that welfare piece. Mm-hmm. Their mental state, what's happening that's changing the energy or that piece where the horse is not wanting. No farrier to touch him, because I know Jay has gone through this even with our horse, Kokanee.
Yeah.
And now he's just a calm, happy guy.
So I like to think about horses like a balloon. And we can think of people that way too. This is what I love what you guys do with facilitating the equine-assisted learning, is because we get to look at how people are and how horses are and how it's similar. Now, if we think of horses as a balloon and we start to inflate the balloon, we think of inflating the balloon as adding stress. Because when we interact with our horses, when we're training, when we're asking them to do different types of work, a lot of the times we're adding a little bit of stress. Some of it comes from what we're doing. Some of it comes from their environment. And we have to realize that it doesn't matter where that stress is coming from. That's air added into the balloon. Now, some horses are good at releasing pressure on their own. And we'll see that. You know, if everybody that's watching right now can just take a second, you know, just lick your lips, take a deep breath, close your eyes. And how do we feel when we do that?
Oh, fabulous! Oh,
that felt great, Jay.
Let's do it. Goodness, let's do it.
Especially me right now because I'm nervous. This is what our horses are doing to release that stress back out. And we'll see some horses are not so good and we find ourselves in trouble with them sometimes. And we'll see type things like they'll hold rigid. You know, you'll see their feet maybe planted a little wider than normal is another sign. Pursed lips. Or even I have one horse, he's getting better at releasing stress. But his telltale sign was holding his breath. And it took me a while to catch that one.
Yeah.
And if we don't recognize that they need to release some of that air out of the balloon, eventually it's going to pop.
Ooh, so, that is a phenomenal parallel. I love that.
Yeah.
Ray Hunt used to say, you want to stay on this side of trouble. And that doesn't mean that we keep the balloon inflated until just before the breaking point. I really liked what Warwick was talking about when he said, you know, he made the comparison of standing up or sitting down in the chair, and that sitting down was easier than standing up. And so we don't necessarily want to keep our balloons inflated very much. I mean, it's okay to know how far you can go, because sometimes you do have a job to do, or you do have a horse that's brings history to the table, and maybe their balloon can't take very much air right now. And so we're watching all the signs, the body language, to understand when we get, you know, more than one signal of body language on top of another, we need to be very, very present and realize that that horse needs some help de-escalating the situation, and possibly helping them feel okay to release a little bit of air out of their balloon. And we can do that in a number of ways. We can take a deep breath, and our horses will really model what we do. If you've watched somebody leading a horse, how often do you see the horse match their footsteps up to the person, especially if the person's very present and engaged in the horse?
So
we can take a deep breath, you know, we can take a step back. One thing that I've really hung on to in the last few years is when we get into trouble with our horses, maybe we've gone too far. And the old adage of you should jump right back on a horse that bucked you off, I think is half a statement. Yes, it's very important to get back on that horse, but it doesn't mean you need to do it immediately.
Exactly.
And we've watched you with the horses, and you work off of a trust, right? Like, you don't just walk in there and be like, oh, okay, this is a job, boom, 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 this is going to get done. You work with them. Like, it's actually a really nice, and I don't know if you guys can tell up there, Jay's pretty calm.
Super calm energy.
He's a nice, calm guy that brings that energy in with the horses. But you don't fight against them. You work with them in a lot of ways.
And I think we'd all agree. Well, we do know this even through science and through fact. The number one thing a horse needs to feel is safe. Mm-hmm. So if we don't present that safety piece, even going along with your balloon, we got to help them to be able to release that. So again, they're feeling safer. They're feeling better. Like, it's just so important that we're looking at every aspect of what that horse is saying. And I agree, you're at a different end with the horse that sometimes you're not seeing that front end doing all that's needed to do. I don't want your job. Like, kudos to you for doing that. But, you know, it's still part of what you do in your job to make sure you too are still able to read all of those body pieces that he's saying. Is there a story or of one horse that it was just, again, so much anxiety and it took a while? How were you able to eventually get that horse to be able to be at feeling safe and being at okay that he can release through the balloon idea?
I have two horses that come to mind, actually. And one of them was a well-trained mare, and she was quite frantic when the other horses weren't close by. So to de-escalate, I shooed her with the horses in the pen with her. And another thing I do with anxious horses is I don't tie them solid. If you have a horse that pulls back, the easiest way to fix them is to get about a 25 or 30 foot long cotton rope, about 3/4 of an inch or 1 inch, and just wrap it around what you're tying to enough that it has some friction on it, but it will give if they pull back. Because they'll pull back and realize that they aren't trapped, and when they realize they're not confined, then they'll release themselves. And it usually only the times where a horse will realize if you're consistent that way. But another reason is when I work on the front feet, especially on the horse, if they try to pull back and they're tied solid, I can get trapped underneath them, and a horse scrambling backwards can do a lot of damage. So
yeah,
I don't want to be involved with that. So if they want to leave, they can leave. That's fine. I'll just go right back over and pick their foot back up, and you know, we'll work it out. But this mare was very, very nervous. She was high energy, and it didn't take much input, I guess, to add stress for her. Built very quickly, and I was working with her, and something that I used to do to kind of help horses calm down and help me calm down is I used to hum a tune when I worked with them. And so the reason why I bring this up is because I want to kind of give a little illustration of how sensitive horses can be. So in music, we have our key signatures where the music starts from, and the music will build to a crescendo and then come back down to the key signature. Now, horses want safety, food, and comfort, right? And so comfort I describe by calling it peace for the horse. Well, what I discovered was when I was humming, and I could do this with a very calm horse too, when the music started to build tension, the horse would build tension. And when I came back down, and I'm talking about like just humming quietly to myself, you wouldn't hear me if you're standing 15 feet away.
I've never heard you singing, so.
There you go. But I actually stopped doing that because I realized that through the music, I was building tension in the horse when my intention was to bring peace to the horse.
Right. Wow. That's super interesting.
And even if you were to have like bring something, and it goes back to that Dr. Masaru Emoto study of how it actually can change your water molecules with positive and negative thoughts and the amount of energy you're bringing to something, that makes perfect sense. That if you are, you know, having a rock on rage one on in your head, the horses are definitely going to feel that peace. Rather than saying, you know, a lullaby, it's a little different.
So, yeah, and I should mention the type of songs would be more like a lullaby type.
Yeah.
Of that level of energy. I mean, our horses can feel tension in us without us saying anything.
Exactly.
So the best thing we can do is be honest and say, if we have to talk to the horse and just have a bit of a confession and say, hey, I'm nervous today. And how are you feeling? And just be very upfront, because our horses know. And when we're not congruent, we have more issues than when we are. Because horses are okay with higher energy. They're okay with people having bad days. They're not okay with people being dishonest because it doesn't make sense to a horse.
Right. Yes. It's not authentic.
Yeah.
I love that.
The one mare, I kept picking her feet up, her front feet, and she would try to lay down. And she was a new horse to me. I'd never put shoes on her before. And so I kept working with her, and I was having a hard time because I couldn't get her front feet done because she would try to lay down every time I picked her feet up. And I was suspecting that she was trained to lay down.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to use different cues to pick the foot up, but always she would want to lay down and still quite nervous, right? All the signs were there. And I try to bring her down, you know. Sometimes I'll put my finger in the corner of the horse's mouth as long as they're in a friendly mood, you know. Just like you would bit a horse, because that'll encourage them to work their mouth. And sometimes we can help them learn to release that way. That's one way.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a great piece of advice right there too.
So none of this was really happening for this horse. Every time I came back, I was just bringing way too much stress to the table for her. And I thought, I took a minute and stood back and just thought about it. This gets back to don't jump right back on the horse. If something went wrong and we don't know what went wrong, we're asking for trouble doing the same thing again. Mm-hmm. And I felt like she thought I was yelling at her. Pick her foot up. That she was that sensitive. And
wow.
So what I did was I came up to her, I did the handshake, you know, let her sniff and approach me, and then pet her and just loved on her for a minute. And then I pointed at her foot with my finger, standing about a foot away, and she picked her foot up and held it for me. And I just went back to petting and loving on her and stepped back and released completely. And we just did that a couple of times until she understood what I was actually asking her. And then she just let me hold her feet and she was okay. It was way too loud for her, me walking up to her and picking her foot up.
Wow. Now that is a welfare, huge boom, boom component. Like that was huge. Me too. I love happy tears. Aww. That's wonderful.
You mush, mush.
We love you, Jane. No wonder our horses are so happy.
No kidding. So, I mean, I think you've kind of covered, our last question was going to be, what does a positive experience for the horses look like to you? But I think that last story pretty much
it brought it together.
Yeah, what that positive piece would look like. Because it really is a dance between you and the horse of being able to understand each other and go into it with the same intention, right?
Absolutely. If we have time, have the second story. It's up to you guys, though.
Oh, yeah. No, we love stories. Stories help us to connect.
So on the converse side, so I was working with a young gelding. He's untrained, and he was also a little bit herd bound. It's not so much herd bound when they're young like that. They're just, you know, they're still babies in their mind a little bit, and they need to have that extra support. And so we've got to take extra time with the babies, especially to really help them feel supported and like they can stand on their own type thing. So this little gelding, when I approached him, he would crouch. If you've ever seen a horse that you're training to unload out of a trailer and they start to squat down about halfway to the ground when they're halfway out of the trailer. So he would go so fearful that he would crouch down when I approached him and went to touch him and shake. And I know where the horse comes from. He's not abused. And he was just quite worried about everything. And of course, a horse that's that scared isn't very safe to work on their feet.
No.
So I took some time to just walk up to where he was comfortable and then leave him alone. And I just kept working on other horses and coming back to him. I had about 10 horses to do that day. And so we just worked back and forth because I knew he was going to have a hard time with this. And you know, in the end, he'd let me walk up to him, but he was still kind of edgy. And so I started working on his feet just with keeping that in mind, because I generally, you know, I'll do things as I'm working, but I don't generally give dedicated time to training when I come do hoof care, unless it's really necessary. So I'll just kind of do the training bit as I go. But this guy just kept getting more frantic, and some of the other horses were being put away while I was working on him, and so that didn't help him too much. And so I untied him and I moved him closer to another horse, and it was too much for him to handle. And so I took him up, untied him, and he was just in a halter and leash yank, and I just sent him out in a circle around me. And what happened was really interesting. He kept trying to run me over. So he would show, and you know, his nose was out. We see this often when we ask a horse to circle around us and they're not with us, and they'll keep their nose to the outside, chin in, and really shoulder in. Well, this guy was going even further and like running headlong into me with his shoulder. I firmly believe that you do as little as possible to get the job done, but as much as necessary. And so I had to take contact up with this guy several times. So at the end of the cotton leech, and you know, usually I'll twirl it around and hopefully that does it, and I'll slap my shaps with the end. And then if that doesn't work, especially if they're going to run into me, I don't like to move out of the way. I like to just kind of be a post and let them crash into me a little bit. But I'm also going to try and send them at the same time away from me with the end of the lead shank and directing their nose too. And I do things like hold my palm and my leading hand up, and I'll hold a flat hand in front of their eye. So I'm not going to hurt them, but it is a pretty good deterrent. And this guy was just having such a hard time being there with me and wanting to be with the other horses, and he didn't feel like he could trust me. But he also didn't have any boundaries with me. And, you know, safety is important for the horse. Safety is important for me. And when we're both safe, that's ideal.
Yes.
And so I sent this little guy out, and then I'd have him turn and go the other way. And he had one side that was particularly worse than the other, as most horses do. And, you know, we did about 10 circles, half circles back and forth. And I had to send him quite firmly at the beginning. And then a couple times after the beginning, when I turned him, he would pause for a second to think. And so I wouldn't drive him at that point. I would just pause myself and wait for him to make a decision. And pretty soon, he made the decision to move his shoulder over instead of running me over and go around in a circle. And then we'd take a break at that point. So this is about 10 minutes worth of work, maybe. And when he softened like that, his head dropped, he started releasing and letting that stress go. You know, we saw his yawning lots, and we just stood there for a few minutes while he released, because I like to leave him alone and just give him peace. I don't really love on him a whole bunch when they're releasing, because sometimes that adds stress. I just stand there and be with them at a comfortable distance. And so when he was done releasing, we just went back to the fence. I finished trimming him up, and he stood good for me. I went and did some other horses and just left him tied with the others. And I came back, and the really cool part about this is when I walked up to him, he didn't crouch, he didn't shake, he didn't shy. In fact, he turned his nose towards me and took a step towards me as I approached him.
Oh, shivers.
And so I just really wanted that story in there to balance with the very sensitive horse, to make sure that we understand that there's also a very important place for boundaries. And a lot of the anxiousness that this horse was feeling was not because he was hurt or abused or there was anything wrong physically. He just didn't know where he stood with me.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know where he was stood with me, his self-confidence was just a mess. He was shattered.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, Well, I am
that was
so
wonderful.
Yeah, that you took the time to tell us those stories too, because I think it's really important people recognize that it's not always the horse's problem.
Like, no,
it's the what happens between to make it a positive experience for both the farrier, because you're right, your welfare should be taken care of as well, and as well as for the horses too. So I think those are perfect stories for that piece.
Seriously, they are. A piece of advice, like one thing, because it's coming from a farrier who has experience, and you're obviously taking that welfare component in each time you work with the horse, because again, we got to be balanced mentally inside to make it obviously a safer and more comfortable experience for our horses. But to horse people who are brand new or who have had horses for years and years and years, but they're starting to feel something in their gut that something is not right when the farrier comes, or something's not right with their horses when the farrier approaches. It's kind of like vets. Sometimes just them in a uniform makes the horse go, wow, what's going on? What kind of advice would you give to us human beings who are trying to figure out what's the best way to help our horse with our farriers? Because it is our job. Mm-hmm. We owe it to our horses to understand what's the best that we can do from them. And instead of always thinking about things, well, this guy knows what to do or this lady knows what to do, but your gut is saying something doesn't feel right, what would be the advice piece that you could give to us little human beings?
I would say the most important thing is trust your intuition. You need to recognize that feeling and recognize it as something true. Now, whether it's a misunderstanding that needs to be cleared up or it's just something's not going right, that feeling is true and it needs to be recognized, and communicate that feeling. So if you have a farrier and you're not feeling right about something that's going on, communicate that with your farrier. I mean, sometimes those conversations are tough, but they're always worth it, even if they don't go, I guess, the way you hope they would. Because you're either going to, you can communicate with your farrier and get on the same page, or you're going to find out that he's not willing to communicate with you, and you know what to do from there. You can't work out so that you... I feel like we all have a vision with horses. It's like a business where you have your vision and your mission. And I feel like we all have that with our horses. And sometimes we don't get really clear about it. And maybe that's the best thing to do, is to get clear about our vision with our horses and understand, okay, I like horses and I want them to be treated fairly. So my vision with my horses would be along the lines of the golden rule, that I would like my horse to be treated the way I would like to be treated. All the while keeping in mind that my horse is a horse, not a person. So I need to appropriately for a horse, not as appropriately for a person. And if we keep that vision in mind and stay true to it, you know, we're going to falter and we're going to screw up, and that's okay as long as we keep that in mind and come back to it. The best thing that we can do is go out there and mess up. And then pick ourselves up and keep trying, because you'll get there. If you keep trying, you'll get there. And when you have your vision in mind with your horses and something's not right inside, you're feeling, you know, you need to express that and you need to work it out. And if you can't reconcile that, then there's a lot of good people out there and you'll be able to find somebody who will be able to reconcile that with you. Whether that's giving you more information to help you understand, or whether they change something, the way they're doing something. A lot of farriers are willing to do things different ways. There's, you know, 100 ways to skin a cat, right?
Yep.
Yeah. No, you're right. That is a great piece of advice. Thank you so much. Because, you know, even if we take it back to your balloon again, mm-hmm. it's kind of exciting to imagine that when we communicate, we actually release instead of keeping it all in and getting frustrated and our anxiety is blowing and blowing up. So I really love that we can bring it back to that balloon piece again, even for the humans. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge for not only us, but globally around the world, helping people to understand what it is that they need to do, again, with the welfare piece, with the farrier component, because it's huge, the foundation.
Thank you again so much, Jay, for joining us. It has been such a pleasure listening to you chat about this vital piece with the horses, and we think that you're absolutely phenomenal, and you definitely belong in this series along with the other experts we've
You
had.
Bet the passion that you have alone is helping all of us. No, seriously, the passion piece, you know, is through you, through work, through Jane, through Doug.
Yeah.
All of you have that passion piece that makes us think more with our heart and feel it in our guts. So it's beautiful that you expert people come and help us to do better for our pony bones. Or and horses. I call them pony bones, but they are horses.
Oh. That's right. I'm going to let you guys know who's going to be on next week.
We got our producer in the background.
Yes. Carson, seat living. Get it? Like driving?
I get it.
All right. So next week we have, Shelly.
Yes, Shelly Whitehouse.
Shelly Whitehouse. On.
Yes.
So join us up for that too. We'll be sending out some information as well throughout the week of what she's going to be talking to us about.
She too is so amazing. That beautiful energy of all that you all have in your expert fields, she too possesses that. So it'll be so exciting to work with her in that partnering piece with our horses versus using horses. There is a huge difference between using and working with.
That's exactly right. So thank you again so much, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
It's been so amazing having you on.
Jay.
Everything you do, too.
Aw, thanks.
Oh, the mushy mush, Jay.
We like that. We appreciate it.
All right, everybody. We will see you all next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in today with us gals from Equine Connection on today's episode of Changing Lives with a Horse, of course. Next week, we're going to have tons more information, and please join us then for more chatting on how these phenomenal creatures are really the best teachers around. We'll talk to y'all then.